Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Hello and welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. In this episode, the potential impact of the new Labour government's hugely ambitious plans for housing. Within days of winning the election, the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, announced a planning revolution intended to build 1.5 million homes over the next 5 years. The aim is to stimulate economic growth and enable generation rent to become generation buy. So, what have they already announced? And what more could be revealed before the government's first 100 days in office are over? The measures are hugely controversial. Keir Starmer, the new Prime Minister, is a YIMBY, or a yes in my backyard. In other words, he's very much pro-development. However, many in Britain are much more NIMBY, likely to be against any development that affects their areas. This means there are likely to be very strong objections to the plans, which include the reintroduction of housing targets for local authorities and the creation of new towns. Poor quality sections of greenbelt land around cities will be designated greybelt and so ripe for development. There are also plans for the private rented sector, abolishing Section 21 no-fault evictions and empowering tenants to challenge unreasonable rent increases. But what will these policies mean for homeowners, those who'd like to climb onto the housing ladder, and for landlords? And how can we build so many new homes when Britain has such an acute shortage of skilled workers and planning officers? To answer these and other questions, I'm joined by Dominic Agais, Winkworth CEO, and by Adam Stackhouse, Head of Developments and Commercial Investments. Welcome to you both. First to you, Dominic. We barely caught our breath after the election result when we were hit by the Reeves planning revolution. What's your reaction to the policies?
Well, quite. They seem to have pretty much kitchen sinked it since they've come into power, I think, in many ways, haven't they? But no, it's great to see housing being front and centre. So I think that's great. And they've obviously spent a bit of time and they've put it high on the agenda, and come out with some pretty bold statements on it all to deliver targets that we'd all like to be seen met, but do have to kind of nuance that they're incredibly difficult to deliver. Clearly, one of the important parts of that is planning, and it is great to see that, you know, there's a recognition of that being one of the levers to deliver homes. There are other parts, and I suppose the important sort of thing to remember is that, you know, in the end, it's the house builders that build the houses, not the government. So they need to be in the right environment, and there need to be other things that follow down the track alongside a recognition of the challenges of planning and investment into the planning departments. It's obviously great to see that they're putting in 300 planning officers, but without pouring too much cold water on it, that is probably less than one per local authority. So, you know, you hear stories of there being 3,000 have left over the last 5 years. So, you know, a lot to be done. Great that it's high up the agenda, though.
As you say, politicians don't build houses, house builders do. What's been the reaction from developers to these plans?
Well, obviously, Adam will come and tell us exactly from the ground up. I think it got pretty bad and ground to a bit of a halt, house building. The sort of division, as we've talked about within the Tory party, had sort of meant that house builders welcomed a Labour government coming in because they saw that they were going to push to build more houses and try and remove some of the barriers to it. I think it was greeted, you know, well that they were putting it, making a line in the sand by bringing it up so early, so after the election. I think there are other parts to look at, and you know, they've got to have the right economic environment to build the houses. They are commercial entities with shareholders to answer to. And planning is one of the challenges for them because of the cost and the time it takes to get projects through. And that's a limitation on which house builders can then develop. You know, certainly have to be a certain scale to survive the current planning setup. But, you know, there are other issues. There's labour shortages, there's increased costs, you know, there's higher interest rates. These are challenges for house builders. And I think they also need to be kind of part of the consideration if we're going to get them to action the development of their land banks.
There's a fundamental NIMBY strain at the heart of the British, and part of that comes from real fear of having their gorgeous view from their house destroyed, but also from a value point of view. A lot of people feel that a lot more new housing in an area will really dent prices because the supply is better. What's your sense of that?
I think it can make places done well. You know, I think you said in the introduction affects areas, and the presumption is that affects things negatively. I think they can affect things positively. You know, we all love our green and pleasant land and our rolling hills, and we don't want to see them concreted over. But, you know, grey areas, brownfield sites, you know, there are disused areas that are not adding to the green and pleasant lands, and I think people would welcome them. What you want to see, I believe, is you want to see, you know, placemaking as well as development of new homes. And I think you've seen some great examples of that recently. I think development's changed a lot. And, you know, the big one and sort of headline one is obviously Battersea Power Station. And you go there and that's now a destination. You know, that's fantastic. You go, they've got the restaurants, the bars, the shopping, a new tube station for the area. It's completely revolutionised that part of South London.
So in placemaking, they prioritise the amenities, transport, great coffee shops, places to go and eat. What else is important to placemaking in your view?
I think it's trying to create a community, isn't it? It's trying to get away from the fear. I mean, this is London sort of focused, obviously, but the fear of sort of skyscrapers, slightly solar skyscrapers that are empty. And I think, you know, they want to create a buzz that generates value for those developments if they're bringing people in and there's a community feel. Then obviously, that's good for the property prices of those developments going forward.
So placemaking needs to be at the top of the government's priorities, but also there is this aspiration to help people onto the housing ladder. Do you think they should get their hopes up, or will they be dashed again?
Yeah, so there are a couple of sort of smaller points within that, aren't there, which is I think the mortgage guarantee system is going to be brought in under the Labour government. So that's a positive for first-time buyers that, you know, struggle to save for the deposit to own their own home. So we'll see what that looks like, but that's a positive for them. On the negative, the stamp duty is going to lapse, the 425 exemption, £425,000 and no stamp duty is being let expire in 2025. So that reduced, I think, to 350,000, if I've got that right. So, you know, that's a bit of a negative. But look, overall, the big challenge is, you know, more homes equals more opportunities for first-time buyers. So that's great news. If there's more being built, then, you know, that should balance supply and demand and allow first-time buyers to get on the ladder.
What you want is a really constructive, well-thought-out approach to this, rather than just thinking that providing more new homes will build the communities that we need. Now, there's been an awful lot of focus on greenbelt land being turned into greybelt land and all those other aspects of the government's plans, but rather less on what they're intending to do for the private rented sector. What's your view of the government's policies on this? And do you think they could have a very adverse impact, meaning that more landlords just leave the industry?
Yeah, I think we're on a bit of a knife edge in that sector. It's been much talked about for a while, but it's incredibly sensitive. And I think there is the law of unintended consequences. So the aspirations, you know, were slightly cross-party, actually. Both were aspiring for a better balanced Renters Reform Act, Renters Rights Act. These are the two major policies of either party. And they both target on helping tenants have better rental accommodation. And that's a great aspiration and one we all aspire to. I think the danger is not scaring off landlords, really. And I think we're 120,000 rental properties short of the number needed to sort of stem rental price inflation. So one's got to be wary that, you know, there aren't really new buy-to-let investors in the marketplace. And that's because interest rates have gone up, legislation has increased. And so you've got an aging landlord base, really, and they will, in due course, sell or, you know, retire part of retirement, if nothing else. And there's no one really replacing them. So there need to be homes for young professionals, and legislation needs to be wary that it needs to still give an investor some rights that will enable him to feel comfortable to make that investment. I mean, the Section 21 is a sort of much talked about no-fault eviction. It is quite a small part of the market that relies on it. I think you're looking at sub 10%. But they have said that, you know, there will be things around it to ensure that landlords can, you know, manage antisocial tenants. But, you know, that does need clarity, because if it is a reliance on a court system that is incredibly clogged up and may take many, many months, and an investor is stuck with a antisocial tenant doing damage to his property and not paying the bills while he has to pay a mortgage or she has to pay a mortgage, then there is no exit for the investor. And as in with all investments, investors look for having an exit should they need to.
What you want the government to be is practical rather than ideologically driven in its stance towards the private rented sector.
Yeah, very much so. I think there can be a lot of fervour around it. I think the aspiration is global. You know, we want people to live in good, young professionals, particularly, you know, moving to cities, to live in good rental accommodation and start their careers and get away from all the sort of slum landlords of bygone eras. But really, that is, I think, driven by getting the balance right, having practical solutions in place to enable that relationship to flourish in a fair manner to both parties.
If Rachel Reeves were here, how would you spell out to her your vision for the ideal street in a town, a village and a suburb? What would be its characteristics that would win over the NIMBYs to more development?
I think the answer to that, to get the local communities aligned, is no one size fits all. And what you want is sympathetic development to the areas that reflects the character and architecture of the housing stock, so that people feel that their area isn't being changed, but it is evolving. And, you know, that's coming with investment and increased services. And then it can be a positive thing, really. So I think it's a balance. I mean, they are centralizing to say that, you know, people now... Planning is ultimately democratic, but they're saying, you know, you have to do it. So it's a view on what you have to do. But we want local developers really building in areas, because, you know, they will be more sympathetic to the areas that they've grown up in. And I think that's an important part. They're prohibited at the moment because planning is too expensive and takes too much time. So I think the ideal is sympathy to what's there already.
So beautiful contextual architecture supported by services in which everybody has buy-in in the community.
Exactly. I go back to, you know, the new tube station, Battersea Power Station. That's great, isn't it? Everyone who's there will love that, and will love the shops and services that have come with the development. So I think that is a great example of what you'd like to see on perhaps smaller scale across the country.
Joined up thinking, that's what we need. But over to you, Adam. All this sounds great, but is any of it going to happen? Will there be a Reeves revolution?
I think yes. I certainly think there will be a Reeves revolution. My initial reaction is that I think there's a high level of positivity. There's an enormous amount of anticipation. We absolutely have a chronic housing shortage in the UK, and we certainly need some urgent action. So the Labour government are offering this, and the intervention powers that they're promoting are broadly being met with approval in the development sector. So there's some excitement that finally local authorities will absolutely have to meet their housing targets. But we're also, I think, moving into a sort of new era where perhaps old to new, and perhaps the definition of new housing schemes in the UK is going to shift as perhaps the younger generation start taking more control and give more input over those decisions. So perhaps less of a threat from NIMBYs.
That's an interesting point. So what would these new housing schemes look like exactly?
I think the lack of planning officers and perhaps the lack of infrastructure for decision making has created a vacuum or a void. So we're now urgently seeking people with fresh ideas who are going to innovate. And that's going to be the creation of a property type that is more relevant to the modern working population, perhaps more relevant to an age group where they're not looking back in the history books of how the UK housing market has evolved, but maybe looking ahead as to how they want it to look in the future. So I think there's a possible opportunity for a completely new era in house building.
So the Stackhouse home, is it a mixed-use development? Is it apartments? Is it housing? I'm still not quite clear how this is going to look.
I think people are learning to slow down a little bit in the modern era. They're working from home. They've got a better work-life balance. So we're looking for heavily pedestrianised areas, access to basic amenities, you know, stores and gyms and fitness clubs without necessarily having to cross a road. So very circular spaces where people feel calm and relaxed, and there's a lot less car usage.
That sounds glorious, but let's return to the practicalities. Have we got enough planning officers and brickies to make any of this happen?
In answer directly to that question, no, we don't. And that is one of the concerns that makes the housing targets that are being mooted potentially impossible. But we've got to look at the data and realise exactly how low new house build starts had become. So I think they've fallen down to roughly about 160,000 in 2023. And the Labour government are promising to supercharge that. So, you know, it's not going to happen immediately, but I think the appetite's there. And, you know, the old need to hand over to the new and let this start to happen.
And your developer clients, what's been their reaction?
I think there's anticipation also, but they're obviously quite battered and bruised from the sector. There's a degree of nervousness certainly amongst them. And I think that the larger scale house builders that the government may attempt to seduce just simply won't respond because they're probably obliged to honour their shareholder requirements. So, you know, these are the guys that have vast land banks that turn the taps on and off according to market prices. And we mustn't forget that market prices need to be protected. The sector that I'm particularly interested in is a small to medium house builder. They're much more agile. They can call on a local workforce with a degree of pace. And they're much more sensitive to the point that Dominic was raising with regards to local architecture and community taste. So if we can encourage them to step forward and have decent banking facilities to build in a patch that they're fluent in, then I think this could start to snowball quite quickly.
So we need the supply of finance. Does there need to be a government incentive, a son of Help to Buy, perhaps?
Help to Buy was a very positive model. It was probably poorly executed in terms of the valuation process. I think the ability to regulate and control a small house builder is probably quite difficult to do over a short period of time. So what they're really crying out for is some sort of concessionary agreement where if they're building a smaller number of properties, perhaps up to 50 units as part of the scheme that they're so expert in, and they may be doing it collaboratively with the landowner, then they need to have some of the regulatory powers relaxed a little bit for those smaller sites where they're not paying such onerous 106 agreements and SIL levies that basically stop them building.
So the bureaucracy is standing in their way still?
I think so. And I think why I'm sort of positive and I have a degree of anticipation about the next couple of years is that that's quite easy to solve if the government step in a pretty firm manner fairly soon.
Now, if someone was listening to this and thinking about a career or even a career change, is this the moment to start training as a bricklayer or an electrician?
Absolutely. I mean, these are very important skills, and that's further data that says that the targets that the Labour government have put out there are completely unattainable. But, you know, we don't absolutely have to hit the top of the bar here. We've just got to shift from this very low level of house building starts. So I believe that's going to happen. And I think an important part of that is the ability and pride that we have in the UK workforce. The courses are available. The government need to reinvest in that. But, you know, from my understanding, a decent standard of bricklaying or carpentry or electrician can be trained within 3 to 4 years, and we're already on the road to a good place.
So people are able to take on apprentices and train them up with the skills they need?
They certainly are, and I think, you know, get these people on site and there'll be a degree of kind of collective motivation to get things done, use a local workforce so they can see that they themselves are investing in their community, maybe give them some incentives, maybe they could get a discount on a property at the end of their job.
Well, it's interesting. When we built our great London squares, the carpenters who worked on those properties would often be allowed to buy a home. Maybe we need to return to that kind of model. What else do you think would get Britain building again?
I think fundamentally a degree of acceptance that the older generation can't just sort of hold on to all these properties that they own. I think there needs to be a seismic shift in outlook and pride in the kind of evolution of the UK. So I think that that is starting to reemerge again. Fewer political scandals and a bit of positive energy will make a difference. But the hard facts are that we need to concentrate on the very agile and vast number of house builders that have got appetite to build. They're not accountable to shareholders. They want to build. They'll build at a much lower profit to return, and they are happy to start work immediately, and they can galvanise a workforce. So the obstacles to a small to medium house builder going on site need to be removed. So that's the planning journey is too complicated. It takes too long. We think that's going to be addressed. We also need to give them financial incentives to get on and build. So perhaps some reasonable VAT discounts that continue throughout the build process, not just at the start. And maybe a national sort of government-backed warranty system so that these house builders aren't forced to shop around amongst the insurers and end up adding additional costs to their journey. There's lots of reasons why the small to medium house builder can have a massive impact on house building starts in the UK, but fundamentally they do need access to a banking facility and they need access to borrowing.
So we've got a list of requirements there for our new Chancellor, Rachel Reeves. Now, before we go, I just want to ask you a question about the British. Are we so fundamentally opposed to modern housing that however beautiful it looks and however many amenities it's surrounded by, there will always be people who mount legal opposition, order judicial reviews? First to you, Dominic, on this one.
Well, I think it's interesting, isn't it, that both parties put it so prominently within their manifesto to build houses. So there is obviously an appeal they're trying to make to connect to a large part of the electorate who want to see new houses. So undoubtedly, you know, there is this balance where people don't want to see their fields concreted over, and that doesn't have to happen as part of development. There are plenty of sites to develop without ruining that. There's obviously certain people who will never change their view and perhaps always be hardcore members of certain communities fighting against development. But I think the vast majority obviously understand the challenge we face, which is giving homes to the young to allow them to go through their life and up the housing ladder as we were able to.
To you, Adam, a nation of NIMBYs or a nation of YIMBYs?
I think we're entering a new era. I'm excited. And I think that we have got previous for acting in a very NIMBY-esque manner. But the reality is that people power will prevail here. And so many youngsters and people in their 30s now are aspirational about owning their own homes. And we need to give them the voice to perhaps overturn some of these technical objections and really get Britain building and give people a sense of pride in their environment. So I think that we are going to see a significant step change in the next 3 to 5 years.
So can we build it? Yes, we can. That's just about it. Dominic and Adam, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. Thank you so much for your insights and your optimism. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.